Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with My Opel, rewarding loyalty and taking care of members.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Very interesting talking to Richard Grogan, and most of the questions were about people who want to continue to work from home in some way, shape or form. Now though, since the days of Arthur Guinness, the Guinness family have had a prominent presence in Irish and English society, and that was heightened by the allure of three sisters, Una, Aileen and Maureen Guinness, regulars at society parties, friends with the rich and famous. Author Emily Harrigan wrote about the sisters in The Glorious Guinness Girls, their lives towards the end of the 1920s, and now she picks up the story as they embark on their married lives in her new novel, The Guinness Girls, A Hint of Scandal. And she's here. Emily, you're so welcome.
Thank you.
I referred to this earlier as a blockbuster. It certainly is. But I want to talk to you a little bit about these women, because as I got to know them in the book, Aileen and Maureen and Una, they're rich, they're spoilt. They're often not very nice, is it fair to say? Sometimes naive. I mean, did you like them as characters?
That is an interesting question. And the answer is yes, I liked them very much as characters. That doesn't always necessarily mean that you think the character is a kind and lovely person. I love them as characters because they're so interesting. And they're not always, I mean, you know, people ask me, do you have a favourite of the Guinness girls? And I do. And I mean, you know, allow me to just reiterate what I always say. These are my imagined versions of these characters.
Yes, so it's important
to
say that.
Yeah, yeah. They're massively based in reality and the research that I did. But they are my invented versions or my imagined versions of these real people. And I have to say that I have great love for Maureen, who is the middle of the three girls. Maureen was probably the most intelligent, highly charismatic and compelling person. She was also, certainly later in her life, she was a ruthless snob. She was so rude and cutting and not a very gifted mother, may I say. Her eldest daughter, Caroline Blackwood, once said that her childhood was too painful to speak about. Okay. So Maureen was not a good mother. She was, as I say, a snobbish and a mean person. But as a character, she was absolutely fascinating.
They all had a strange way of approaching motherhood, didn't they? I mean, Una, she crossed the line in society at the time because she was giving baths to her son, her little baby son, and, you know, mad about him, wanted to be with him all the time. And that was frowned upon.
She was absolutely child mad. At one point, she was nicknamed London's oldest teenager because people felt that she was a quite childish person. And that, I think, is kind of a lovely thing when you think about what it meant to her in terms of being a mother. She was really hands-on. And exactly as you say, the period that this book is set in, The Guinness Girls, A Hint of Scandal, is the 1930s. It was not normal for a woman of her background to be the kind of hands-on mother that she was. And people thought she was odd for the amount of time she wanted to spend with her children, the amount that she emotionally invested in them. But that was the way she was. She wanted so many children. One of the sad things of her life is, firstly, that she was advised repeatedly by doctors not to keep having children. Her first pregnancy and birth were difficult, and she was told, don't have any more children. She did have more children, and each time she was told, you really shouldn't. And yet she did. And then there were many tragedies for her in terms of children who didn't survive. Mm-hmm. She had a baby who died within a few days of birth. She had a daughter who died at age 14. And then she had her son, Tara, who died age 21. So for somebody who loved children, who wanted children, who had children, she then suffered the loss of three children, which is very, very tragic by any standards.
Yeah, I felt sorry for her when she had to rest when she was pregnant with her first child, and she was sitting there and she felt horrible and she wasn't well and she couldn't do anything. And then Philip was just drifting. Her husband was, you could see him, you could sense him, feel him drifting away from her. And of course, her glamorous friend Violet is in the picture as well.
Yes, indeed. And the glamorous friend who was her bridesmaid. So the documented reality, and it's also a storyline that I pursue in the novel, is that Una married Philip in 1929. Valerie was her bridesmaid. And then by 1935, They were divorced, Una and Philip. And then Philip and Valerie got married. Now, Una also remarried, but she did have to deal with the knowledge that her best friend and her husband were falling in love with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And there she was having babies and trying to manage her position in society, be a mother in the way she wanted to be a mother, and also try and tend to her relationship, her marriage, which was failing in front of her.
And the photograph of her friend with her husband wearing the bridesmaid's dress. I mean,
yes.
How mean is that?
That's really mean. But also, I find that really fascinating because it's this coded message, or that's how I interpret it. So again, I have this as a narrative within the novel, but it is, again, this is a documented fact that Una was beginning to realise that there was something between her husband and her best friend slash former bridesmaid. How certain she was, I don't know. But then she sees this photo of them in a society magazine. They're out together, the two of them, mm-hmm. and Valerie is wearing, and this is 5 years after the wedding, Valerie's wearing a five-year-old dress.
Yeah.
And it's the dress Una bought her to be bridesmaid. That's a message. That didn't
completely.
Happen by chance.
Not
she didn't just throw that dress on and go, this old thing.
At that level, with the cash that they had available to them, despite the fact that there's, you know, a recession on, they were still very wealthy. There was no need to do that.
No, absolutely.
Unless she was sending a message.
And I think it very much speaks to the idea that in the 1930s, no matter the fact that these Guinness women were really rich, there was still a lack of power and a lack of agency in women's lives that meant that these coded messages, you know, a sign given by dress rather than more overtly, is something that still happened. And I find that very fascinating.
How were the women judged by society? And I'm thinking about this question. I mean, you'd never ask it now, but you'd certainly ask it then. How well did they marry?
Oh, I mean, that is a fascinating question because they were brought up to marry well. That was their job. So through the first book, The Glorious Guinness Girls, that's set mostly in the 1920s. And that consists of their coming out into London society. And all three of them got married at the end of the 1920s. The last one to get married was Una, was Maureen. She got married in 1930. So that was the business of their lives through the 1920s, was to make these marriages. They didn't make spectacular marriages. They really didn't. Maureen certainly made the grandest marriage because she married the Marquess of Dufferin and Ava. And he was a very brilliant man, Basil Blackwood, who was expected to have this very brilliant political career. And that was a very grand title. So in terms of how well did they do, Maureen did pretty well. But Una and Eileen didn't do spectacularly well.
But Maureen is in this house owned by Basil, with it just sounds horrendous, crumbling. The staff are wearing wellies and overcoats. It sounds miserable, that existence. I mean, she never wanted that anyway. She certainly didn't want it at the beginning of her marriage, but the death of her father-in-law meant that she was landed there pretty quickly. But any money that was spent on that house came from her family.
Absolutely. So that house is a very grand house called Clandeboy in County Down, in the north of Ireland. It is the family home of the Marquess of Dufferin and Ava. So that was Basil's family home. And it was at the time that they went to live there, and even afterwards when Maureen had poured a huge amount of money into this house, it was so vast and it was so derelict by the time she took it on that really the money was just falling into this black hole. All the money that she put into it, it did eventually, it's now a very beautiful and, you know, kind of fully functioning house. But in the early days of her marriage, so through the 1930s in which the Guinness Girls, A Hint of Scandal is set, she is overseeing and paying for these repairs to the house. And none of it's making any real difference. There is still the roof that leaks. As you say, the footman and the butler were famous for wearing wellies around the house. The food was inedible. It was always pheasant. And it was so tough that it was unchewable. And it was cold by the time it got to the dining room. And there was this hilarious system of menu cards that would be sent up for the lady of the house to decide what was for dinner. There would all be all of these beautiful things on offer. And no matter what she chose, the menu cards would go back to the kitchen, and out of the kitchen for lunch and dinner would come pheasant. and nothing else, no matter what she put on the menu cards.
And she never met the cook, did she? Was it Mrs. Samuels?
She never went into the kitchens. She never met her and she never went into the kitchens. And I drew a lot of that about the house from Caroline Blackwood's novel, Great Granny Webster, is a book. So Maureen's eldest daughter, Caroline, was a very talented writer. And she wrote this book that was longlisted, I think was shortlisted for the Booker Prize. In the end, it didn't win because Philip Larkin, who was one of the judges, said, it's not a novel. It's too autobiographical. So she has all of these details about, you know, bits of string tied to the ceiling to guide drips into a pot. So there was a pot and there was a string and there was the constant plonk, plonk, plonk of water dripping into it. So I set quite a bit of the Guinness Girls A Hint of Scandal in Clanderboy because it just, you can't have a house like that or hear of a house like that and not want to put some action there.
So we've talked a bit about Maureen, we've talked a little bit about Una. Aileen, tell us a bit more about Aileen. Aileen lived in Dublin in Castleknock.
That's right, she lived in Luttrellstown Castle. And so she's the eldest of them. Extremely elegant person. Slightly less eccentric than either Maureen or Una. She was very keen on clothes, so all her clothes were bought in Paris. And while she was living at Luttrellstown, she was living this very horsey, kind of jet-setty life. A lot of Hollywood, a lot of, like, Douglas Fairbanks was a big visitor, a lot of aristocracy, a lot of racing and hunting. And also, the rumour with Aileen was that she sent all her clothes, including her underclothes, to Paris to be laundered. She didn't even trust us, Irish people, to wash her clothes.
And her hair?
Her hair beautifully set, again, mostly done in London. She would go to London or to Paris to order her clothes and get her hair done. And then she would come back and she would give these fabulously glamorous parties in Luttrellstown Castle. Mm-hmm. She always seemed to me to be somehow inhabiting her life with less enthusiasm than the other two. That marriage also, so by the end of the 1930s, two of the Guinness girls were divorced. Aileen was divorced and Una was divorced. Maureen stayed married, but her husband, Basil, died in the First World War. Aileen's husband, then divorced, also died, the Second World War, also died in the Second World War. There was a lot, I mean, the historical context of the time is so fascinating. So much happens in the UK in particular through the 1930s as they're moving towards the Second World War. And they were very much not involved because their wealth and their position in society kept them peripheral to any real involvement. But they were certainly there as spectators and they were engaged in that political scene in which fascism and communism are both rising at the same time.
Yeah, and there's a bit about the Mitfords and the Oswalds and all the rest in here. When does this take us up to?
So this goes to 1936. And at that stage, Una is divorced and remarried. So she remarried Dominic, who was Lord Oranmore and Brown. He had five children by the time he divorced his first wife. He and Una got married in 1936. Aileen is running into trouble in her marriage and Maureen is conducting a very intense relationship with her husband that seems to have been a very tempestuous marriage. A lot of love, a lot of passion, but a lot of anger, a lot of arguments, a lot of drinking also. And then the broader kind of political context is that Britain is adopting this policy of appeasement and it is in full swing at that time, but there is massive unrest on the streets of Britain. So the 1930s was characterised by these hunger marches in which tens of thousands of people would take to the street. There was one march from Glasgow to Dublin that was met by a crowd of 20,000 people at Hyde Park. They were marching for enough money, like a living wage, enough money to pay to keep their families alive, to keep their children fed, because that was not a given for them at that stage.
Millions of people unemployed.
3.5 million. Massive unemployment. So again, out of that is coming this huge rise in communism and fascism. And the Guinnesses are connected then because Oswald Mosley, who set up the British Union of Fascists, he married Diana Mitford, who was previously married to their cousin, Brian Guinness. So they all work into the novel as well. And so the lives of the Guinness sisters are becoming quite sticky and quite unravelled and quite tempestuous. And then at the same time, the political and social kind of scheme of Britain is also becoming
I'm sure you're working on the next one. The next instalment.
I am. Do you know what? I have something in mind. It's not a direct next instalment, but there is some. There's a character I want to pursue.
Well, yes. For now, this one is absolutely fabulous. It's a great read. They're such intriguing characters, so well researched. I mean, it is fiction, but as you say, it's founded in fact and a lot of work on their background as well. It's out now. It's published by Hachette. It's called The Guinness Girls: A Hint of Scandal by Emily Harrigan. You don't have to have read the first one to get into this one. I mean, I was straight into it, hadn't
Brilliant.
Read the first one, so
that's what I hoped. Yes,
Emily, thank you so much for coming in to
thank
talk
you for
to us
having
and the best
me.
Of luck with it. Let's take a
thank
break.
You